Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sitnell-Reed, and my co-host, Gwen Sheltimer. Each week at this time, we usually visit with an author or editor, teacher or publisher, playwright or poet, getting a glimpse into the lives of local and regional people who have a connection with the world of words. This week, because it's the holiday season, Gwen and I thought we would simply entertain you with words. We've put together an assortment of stories and poems about the Christmas season. Some will make you laugh. Perhaps some will make you cry. And some might jog memories of your own Christmases, past and present. Consider it our gift from Word on the Hills to you. Now sit back with a hot drink and perhaps a roaring fire and enjoy. What are we starting with, Gwen?
Well, I thought we should start with a few stories about Christmas in the country, seeing as we are in Northumberland County. And so the first is called The Stable by Grace Noel Crowell. I'm so glad he was not born in some rich palace bed. I'm so glad to know it was a lowly place instead, a place where soft-eyed cows and sheep were sheltered and fed. And to the country born of earth, a stable will ever be a wholesome place, where night comes down with its tranquillity, a place of heart's ease and content for all who choose to see. And so I like to think of him first opening his eyes in that good elemental place, beneath the friendly skies, that the men of fields could find him there, as well as the great and wise. And our second country story is by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Pearl S. Buck. She originally wrote this story in 1955, and then with illustrations by Mark Bruner, it was released as a picture book in 2002. And the story is called Christmas Day in the Morning. He was 15 years old and still on his father's farm. He loved his father. He had not known it until one day, a few days before Christmas, when he had overheard what his father was saying to his mother. "Mary, I hate to call Rob in the mornings. He's growing so fast and he needs his sleep. If you could see how he sleeps when I go in to wake him up. I wish I could manage alone." "Well, you can't, Adam," his mother's voice was brisk. "Besides, he isn't a child any more. It's time he took his turn." "Yes," his father said slowly, "but I sure do hate to wake him." When he heard these words, something in Rob spoke. His father loved him. He had never thought of that before, taking for granted the tie of their blood. Neither his father nor his mother talked about loving their children. They had no time for such things. There was always so much to do on the farm. Now that he knew his father loved him, there would be no loitering in the mornings and having to be called again. He got up after that, stumbling blindly in his sleep and pulling on his clothes, his eyes shut, but he got up. And then, on the night before Christmas, that year when he was 15, he lay for a few minutes thinking about the next day. They were poor, and most of the excitement was in the turkey they had raised themselves, and mince pies that his mother made. His sisters sewed presents, and his mother and father always bought him something he needed, not only a warm jacket, maybe, but something more, such as a book. And he saved and bought them each something, too. He wished that Christmas, when he was 15, he had a better present for his father. As usual, he had gone to the 10-cent store and bought a tie. It had seemed nice enough until he lay thinking the night before Christmas. He looked out of his attic window. The stars were bright. "Dad," he had once asked when he was a little boy, "what is a stable?" "It's just a barn," his father had replied, "like ours." Then Jesus had been born in a barn, and to a barn the shepherds had come. The thought struck him like a silver dagger. Why should he not give his father a special gift, too, out there in the barn? He could get up early, earlier than 4 o'clock, and he could creep into the barn and get all the milking done. He'd do it alone, milk and clean up, and then when his father went in to start to the milking, he'd see it all done, and he would know who had done it. He laughed to himself as he gazed at the stars. It was what he would do, and he mustn't sleep too sound. He must have waked 20 times, scratching a match each time to look at his old watch. Midnight, and 1:30, and then 2 o'clock. At 3:15 he got up and put on his clothes. He crept downstairs, careful of the creaky boards, and let himself out. The cows looked at him, sleepy and surprised. It was early for them, too. He'd never milked all alone before, but it seemed almost easy. He kept thinking about his father's surprise. His father would come in and get him, saying that he should get things started while Rob was getting dressed. He'd go to the barn, open the door, and then he'd go and get the two big empty milk cans. But they wouldn't be waiting, or empty. They'd be standing in the milk house, filled. "What the—" he could hear his father exclaiming. He smiled and milked steadily, two strong streams rushing into the pail, frothing and fragrant. The task went more easily than he had ever known it to go before. Milking for once was not a chore. It was something else, a gift to his father who loved him. He finished. The two milk cans were full, and he covered them and closed the milk house door carefully, making sure of the latch. Back in his room, he had only a minute to pull off his clothes in the darkness and jump into bed, for he heard his father get up. He put the covers over his head to silence his quick breathing, and the door opened. "Rob," his father called. "We have to get up, son, even if it is Christmas." "All right," he said sleepily. The door closed and he lay still, laughing to himself. In just a few minutes his father would know. His dancing heart was ready to jump from his body. The minutes were endless. 10, 15. He did not know how many. And then he heard his father's footsteps again. The door opened and he lay still. "Rob!" "Yes, Dad?" His father was laughing, a queer, sobbing kind of laugh. "Thought you'd fool me, did you?" His father was standing by his bed, feeling for him, pulling away the cover. "It's for Christmas, Dad!" He found his father and clutched him in a great big hug. He felt his father's arms go around him. It was dark, and they could not see each other's faces. "Son, I thank you. Nobody ever did a nicer thing." "Oh, Dad, I want you to know I do want to be good." The words broke from him of their own will. He did not know what to say. His heart was bursting with love. He got up and pulled on his clothes again, and they went down to the Christmas tree. Oh, what a Christmas! And how his heart had nearly burst again with shyness and pride, as his father told his mother and made the younger children listen about how he, Rob, had got up all by himself. "Best Christmas gift I ever had, and I'll remember it, son, every year on Christmas morning, so long as I live." They had both remembered it, and now his father was dead, he remembered it alone. That blessed Christmas dawn, when alone with the cows in the barn, he had made his first gift of true love.
That story certainly brings home the fact that we don't need a lot of money to get into the Christmas spirit. We just need to think of others with kindness. This little poem by Edgar Guest says it very well. It's called At Christmas. A man is at his finest towards the finish of the year. He's almost what he should be when the Christmas season's here. Then he's thinking more of others than he's thought the months before, and the laughter of his children is a joy worth toiling for. He is a less selfish creature than at any other time. When the Christmas spirit rules him, he comes close to the sublime. A very famous poem by Christina Giordina Rossetti also talks about giving, and that perhaps all you need to give is love. She wrote this poem about the year 1870, but it was only published after her death in 1904. It has also been set to music a number of times, most famously by Gustav Holst. The poem was first published under the title A Christmas Carol, but we know it better as In the Bleak Midwinter. In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. Earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone. Snow had fallen, snow on snow, snow on snow, in the bleak midwinter long ago. Enough for him whom cherubim worship night and day, breastful of milk and a manger full of hay. Enough for him whom angels fall before, an ox and ass and camel which adore. What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what can I give him? Give my heart. And even though it was written 150 years ago, the same sentiment still applies today. Here is a short story I found on the internet called Christmas is for Love. Unfortunately, the author remains unknown. Christmas is for love, it's for joy, for giving and sharing, for laughter, for reuniting with family and friends, for tinsel and brightly covered packages. But mostly, Christmas is for love. I had not believed this until a small elfin-like pupil with wide innocent eyes and soft rosy cheeks gave me a wondrous gift one Christmas. Matthew was a 10-year-old orphan who lived with his aunt, a bitter middle-aged woman, greatly annoyed with the burden of caring for her dead sister's son. She never failed to remind young Matthew that if it hadn't been for her generosity, he would be a vagrant, homeless waif. Still, with all the scolding and chilliness at home, he was a sweet and gentle child. I had not noticed Matthew particularly until he began staying after class each day to help me straighten up the room. We did this quietly and comfortably, not speaking much, but enjoying the solitude of that hour of the day. When we did talk, Matthew spoke mostly of his mother. Though he was quite young when she died, he remembered a kind, gentle, loving woman who always spent time with him. As Christmas drew near, however, Matthew failed to stay after school each day. I looked forward to his coming, and when the days passed and he continued to scamper hurriedly from the room after class, I stopped him one afternoon and asked why he no longer helped me in the room. I told him how I had missed him, and his large brown eyes lit up eagerly as he replied, "Did you really miss me?" I explained how he had been my best helper. "I was making you a surprise," he whispered confidentially. "It's for Christmas." With that, he became embarrassed and dashed from the room. He didn't stay after school any more after that. Finally came the last school day before Christmas. Matthew crept slowly into the room late that afternoon, with his hands concealing something behind his back. "I have your present," he said timidly when I looked up. "I hope you like it." He held out his hands, and there, lying in his small palms, was a tiny wooden box. "It's beautiful, Matthew. Is there something in it?" I asked, opening the top to look inside. "Oh, you can't see what's in it," he replied, "and you can't touch it or taste it or feel it. But Mother always said it makes you feel good all the time, warm on cold nights and safe when you're all alone." I gazed into the empty box. "What is it, Matthew?" I asked gently, "that will make me feel so good?" "It's love," he whispered softly, "and Mother always said it's best when you give it away." He turned and quietly left the room. So now I keep a small box, crudely made of scraps of wood, on the piano in my living room, and only smile when inquiring friends raise quizzical eyebrows when I explain to them there is love in it. Yes, Christmas is for gaiety, mirth, song, and for good and wondrous gifts. But mostly, Christmas is for love.
Now that's quite a heart-wrencher of a story, isn't it? It's nearly time for our break, so let's lighten the mood a little and finish with this little fun poem that my grandchildren introduced me to. It's called Snowball by Shel Silverstein. I made myself a snowball, as perfect as could be. I thought I'd keep it as a pet and let it sleep with me. I made it some pajamas and a pillow for his head. Then last night it ran away, but first it wet the bed. You've been listening to a special holiday edition of Word on the Hills. Join us again after the break when we'll share some letters to Santa, some interesting facts and fun stories, and poems about the holiday season.